Osiris had it, and he held his life from Ra the sun god. Always the cross and the spiritual sun blaze together. Christianity has taken the cross from the circle, divorcing it from the sign of completion, of promise, leaving only the suffering, meaningless and filled with doubt. But in its original conception the symbol implied a certainty of completion and fulfillment. After a while Zeros continued. I have traced for you very sketchily the mystical evolution of mankind. I have not touched upon the historical or anthropological aspects which belong to the physical evolution, for there would not be the same lessons to learn, nor would they widen your understanding of the realities, which is what is so badly needed. But if you take your cross at the center, where love is, and hold it aloft in your lives, remembering that it is encircled by the symbol of fulfillment, you will have helped to bring that salvation nearer. And if you feel that the Atlantean story has brought you a bitter heritage to redeem, recall also that it made the world safe for goodness to blossom, and far more than that, it was a safety valve through which much original sin was allowed to manifest and to be transmuted. Your Creator does not make mistakes, nor is he subject to the limitations of time and space, as you are. Would you say that our modern troubles are due to the fact that man's intellect has outstripped his spiritual understanding? Zeros thought for a moment before replying. That is partly true, but you must not forget that generation after generation has continued to reinforce that sink of iniquity in the lower astral planes. As evil personalities died and passed into those dark realms, they added their quota to the forces of evil. Yours is not the only world, though it is a peculiar conceit of your thinkers that such must be so. There are many realms of space in which a varying degree of goodness or badness is able to express itself. Remember that God redeems through free will, not so much of the human mind which is not very effective, but of the soul, which is where the real effect is manifest. It is in the soul that man believes, whether it is incarnate or discarnate, in the great lie of evil, that terrible delusion which holds man's existence in its fateful thrall, a lie that man himself created and invested with the semblance of truth until he has come to believe in it. The later Atlanteans were intellectual in many ways, but their civilization degenerated into an era of brute force, and intellect died. Earlier men lived through intuition, through spiritual guidance, but in your own day, through false logic, it has given way to an age of reason. But reason is nothing by itself, it is merely argument, and if the premises are not true then reason must fail. But then the growing intellect uncovered such knowledge as the atomic theory, the indivisibility of human existence, the menace of global war. These broke down the fixed nature of materialistic ideas and many cherished theories, leaving you once more at sea, with no harbor to which to steer. A new note of enthusiasm crept into his voice as my companion concluded. A wonderful new age is dawning upon your world, an age in which war will be impossible because men will know that they would be going to war against God. Your understanding of Christianity will blossom out into a new concept that will not be limited by the name of religion. There will be no creeds, for creeds are boundaries set by fear of the unknown. It will be a vista that will stretch out into the future, beckoning in such a way that no man would deny himself the joys it offers at every step of the way. Then your intellectual capacity will come into its own, not to rule your outlook but to serve it. To see a great light and to worship it from within the false security of ignorance is one thing, but to see that light and recognize it for what it is, that is something quite different, for then you are not apart from it, you belong to it and understand it. Then no man can stand between you and it, or seek to distort your understanding of it. Evolution, whether of the soul or the body, never stops, it is always advancing, always changing. The backward races of today are not tomorrow's intellectuals, they are fulfilling their part in a great plan of redemption, and their reality is spiritual, not physical. They have their place alongside the most advanced peoples. All are manifestations of the Most High and are being used in the vast program. It is man's purpose and destiny to work out this program under omniscient direction, but he must not expect to solve the mystery in the light of his material knowledge alone. He must work on until the very soil of his world must be uplifted as his own vibrations are raised. Then, with that glorious consummation, the cross of suffering will begin to fade, leaving only the timeless circle of completion, of glorious fulfillment, the seeds of which were sown in Atlantis. Your world is rapidly approaching a renaissance of which your thinkers are not yet conscious. That is what Jesus foretold when he said, "I, if I be lifted up, will draw all men unto me." A note the all-embracing meaning of that promise. There is nothing in the past of man to point his way into the future that awaits him. A chapter 12, the coming of Christianity. On a later occasion Zeros and I took up the question of the Christian era and its place in human history. He reminded me that in the truest sense of the word the earth was impregnated with Christianity from its very inception. I scarcely needed this reminder, for my first experiences with him had been to witness this divine baptism. Just as the physical world had, of necessity, to descend into material existence from the spiritual, so did the cosmic Christ have to accompany it, for it is a part of him, the two could never be severed. The world's history covers a period when spirit wrestles with materialism for the soul of man, a struggle born of man's freedom to choose which way he will go, and is deeply affected by his repudiation of that spiritual support without which he cannot reclaim his destined status. With a glance at my formidable pile of notes he added, I will not weary you with the development of Christianity for you have plenty of historical data concerning its spread. But I would like to enlarge upon what lay behind the Easter story. There was not one reason for the mission of Christ but many. There is a separate reason upon every plane of thought on which the matter is considered. But there is one overriding aspect which applies to every plane, for he brought an entirely new conception of love, a new ray of that golden power which the Eternal One pours upon the children of his heart through the being of the cosmic Christ, a source of inspiration and help which had been denied to man since his fall from grace. Whereas in the Garden Beautiful he had been able to absorb love as a child absorbs it, without question or understanding what it was, love was now brought down to his conscious mind so that he could observe and understand it, and know it for what it was. He realized that it was something which could transform his life. Your theologians have got into such an impasse in their interpretation of the Gospels that I would like to paint a picture that might help you to visualize the King of Love as he really is. You cannot get at the reality behind Christian teaching by literal interpretation alone, you must have the right background. You must widen your vision from the parochial to the universal. I describe the absolute perfection of God as a beam of white light, and I likened the cosmic Christ to a prism through which this light was passed and broken up into a myriad colors. The white light would be perfect beyond measure, darkness would be instantly destroyed in its presence, there could be no contrast with it. So attractive is it that anything it creates, and is therefore separated from it, longs ceaselessly for reunion with it, so great is the ache of separation. Yet there must be separation if there is to be experience, there must be the contrast of shadow if the light is to be known for what it is. Because its radiations would be too great for created mankind to bear, it is passed through the Christ prism and broken up into its constituents, each with their destined influence upon growing man, each identifiable yet in reality being only part of a perfect whole. But this contrasting environment has nothing to do with what you call evil, for the shadow is real and evil is ephemeral, having no existence on its own. Now let us imagine that the glorious colors from the prism are falling upon a tray of gems of all kinds, some large, some small, some cut, others uncut, some almost dust. The cut and polished gems reflect the rays of color and radiate them to all around. Those gems in the rough do not reflect, they are not yet ready to do so. Yet each holds a potential ability to shine, they only need cutting and polishing. We may take the white beam as the creative power of God, the prism is the cosmic Christ and through him the beam is broken up into many different colors, many far beyond human vision. The gems are the life of God manifested as souls having individual existence and freedom of choice that they might learn to know themselves for what they really are. They have no light of their own, only that which they can reflect. being born through the cosmic Christ Spirit, only through him can they return to their source. Many do not yet know the light and cannot reflect very much, but in time the divine cutter will work upon them, and his tool is love. Suddenly a new ray of light flashes forth from the prism, a golden ray falling upon the gems and setting them alight with a new fire, not their own. This ray we may take to be the incarnation of the Christ in the person of Jesus. Like man, the Christ has no existence by himself, for he too is part of the Supernal One. Did he not say so? This golden ray was a new experience for the gems, which had hitherto experienced only the cold hard radiance of the colors, with little warmth in them. But now all is changed, for the golden ray infuses them all, illuminating them with new meaning. But the radiance of the new ray was so powerful that it was rejected by many and had to be withdrawn, but it left an afterglow that has never really died away, for its memory lives on in the spirits of men and women who are reminded of something they once knew. You could have no existence without the cosmic Christ, for he is the mother through whom you were born, whether Christian or not. Now can you see what is meant by opening the heart to spirit? For it allows the light and the love of God to enter in through its destined channel, to transform and renew the whole being. Even the scratching of an uncut gem can have this effect. A tiny ray of love can enter in and begin the divine transformation. But with many it needs the rough usage of suffering to wear away the grime that encrusts the surface and allow the love light to enter. Can you wonder why people have to suffer? Many have tried, but it is not possible to separate the Christ from Jesus the Nazarene, any more than you can separate the cosmic Christ from God. And equally you cannot separate a single soul from either Christ or God, for all are one in reality. The whole idea of separation is an illusion into which man has sunk until he has come to believe in it. Thus the Christ of love is the Spirit of God made manifest, the only Savior of all souls, and the elder brother for all who see him best as such. In this little picture you will find all the ancient mysteries, all the divine messages of the ages, all you need to know to remove the ache from the heart of man, and show him to himself for what he really is. With all the complexity of manifestation, complex because of man's fall from the light into the mists, is not God simple? Absolute perfection seems to you such an unattainable idea. So far off, yet time and space are not realities, there is no distance, so that it really is the background of your existence and your being. No space exists between you and another soul, for both are undimensional in reality. They only use dimensions in order to experience. In reality they are a part of God who is all there is. So as you are willing to be nothing in yourselves, miracles can be accomplished through you, without restriction of time or space. A good thought flashes through the ethers, undying because it meets with no resistance. An evil thought encounters the atmosphere and is soon expended. So is it not clear that man holds the power to release himself from the thraldom of evil? Only an ignorance of the realities holds him. In the great open fire of the sunlight, Christ is giving himself to you. Absorb and reflect his light. For like love it cannot be stored up, if it is static it will dissipate. Let it flow forth and it will be replenished in full from the eternal reservoir. That is the law. Love comes to you, not through reasoning or events, but through the heart, rising, burning its way through the dross, breaking through the crust of each human soul. It is Christ at work, the living manifestation of God. It was upon another occasion that Zeros spoke again of esoteric Christianity. To be absorbed by the soul, he said, is opposed to the brain. Christianity has to be spiritually discerned. No doubt it was for this reason that Jesus left no writings. Had he done so, his teachings would have been intellectually analyzed and so denigrated. Therein a meaning cannot confine truth in mere words. But because of his infinite wisdom he was able to touch the words with his magic, so that even when translated they retain much of their illumination. Their inner meaning is not imprinted upon the matrix of each human mind freshly created, but it calls forth something that is already there, a dim memory that filters through from the spirit within. It was because his golden message caught an answering gleam from a race memory implanted by Atlantean colonists of ancient days that his message of love continued to spread long after he had passed from a living sight. The reading of books will not bring you wisdom of itself, it can only call forth a wisdom that is already there, implanted in the ages that are past. You gather true wisdom in your soul, not in your mind. But of course, such an idea would be unacceptable to those who do not believe in the pre-existence of the human soul. I agreed that that was clear to me and accounted for a lot that had puzzled me. I said, how Christianity spread so amazingly among hard-headed people who would not ordinarily have accepted a message of love and sacrifice, but why did it stop? Why does it not do so today? Zeros spoke gravely. That is because the puree of love had not then been overlaid with theological doctrine. Love is like a shaft of light piercing a mist, but if you dress it up with mirrors and reflectors it will stop short at the intellect, it will not reach the soul, where alone it can have its real effect. For there it can be fed and renewed by the presence of the cosmic Christ, who is shut out of the intellect. The infant cares nothing about the pain and suffering its mother has endured on its behalf, but it responds instantly to her love. The earth which you know had not known this ray of love until Jesus gave it new meaning and showed it to be the food of the Spirit. The power which unites man to man and man to God. Without it they remain isolated and alone, and love can hardly flow, there is no food for the Spirit, or unity to draw them together. People often ask why Christ could not manifest again. I asked. And so put men's doubts at rest, why does he not do that? Because, as I have already explained, man must release himself, otherwise he would be but a robot and lose his freedom of choice, which is his only ladder out of the impasse into which he has sunk. He has been shown the way but he must not be propelled along it against his will. The Christ has promised to manifest again when the moment is ripe, but there would be no object in incarnating again. Man would only reject him once more, just when he is on the verge of being ready to accept a more spiritual notion of his existence. Maybe that sublime moment is nearer than many imagine, none of us knows. But we may judge that the perfect moment might be when man's spiritual understanding has grown to such an extent that it matches the growth of his intellect. At present his intellect is appreciably ahead of his spiritual understanding. But there is a great hunger apparent for spiritual knowledge and that is a most heartening sign. But realize that the Christ will not come to judge, as some fear. He will come, as he said, to make all things new, and that does not imply destruction. It is in that terrible newness, terrible to those minds which have become inured to selfishness and domination, that the stains in the soul of man will become apparent to all. And he will see himself and judge himself from his own spirit. For some the experience will be unendurable and the soul will flee the body because it can no longer bear the light, which will be visible to all. It is all the now, in the ethers, it is only that man's perceptions are so case-hardened that they cannot sense them. But when the veil is torn away man will know himself for what he is. Men have sought the Holy Grail of Spirit through the ages, it is the light of the cosmic Christ they seek, in their inner consciousness they know it is there, but their minds recognize only what they can prove objectively. Try and think always of humanity as a unity, a whole complete conception of God rather than as a collection of individuals. In their spirits they are all one, only in their souls do they possess isolated identity. The divine harvest is for all humanity. Not for a few chosen individuals, what a contradiction of love that would be! That which God has created is real and cannot be destroyed, only that which man has evolved out of himself must be left behind to perish. Surely you can see that during the last 50 years of your time the barriers of unreality have broken down, one by one. Indivisibility is becoming an accepted principle of the life of mankind. Barriers of class and creed, of pride and prejudice and fear, have been torn down after the terrible conflicts which have shaken your civilization to its insecure foundations. Nothing that man attempts which does not have the seal of goodness has any enduring success. How can you find peace and security in such conditions? Ao, the truth is that the influence of the cosmic Christ is intervening in the affairs of man, destroying the false fate Tilda section has hid so much misery, preparing the ground for a new world, when all things shall be made new, when all men shall bow the head to the rule of the Christ of love. Obviously he is not coming to Christians alone, he will not claim any one church for his own, his church will be the hearts of men and women, one great heart beating with love for him. And that must clearly include all discarnate souls as well. Azeros stood up and it seemed as if he filled my small room with his presence. He spread wide his arms as if to include all of humanity. Eh, my son, the lives of men are not broken on the wheels of chance, for all are participating in a great redemption. For the Father's sake be tender, because of the broken heart of the past, be strong to help the soul of the present. Already his physical body was beginning to fade, giving place to a more radiant form which shone so brightly that I could scarcely bear to look upon it. His voice became inexpressibly tender and sweet. Ao, Heavenly Father, Eternal One, strong to help and swift to save, may thy love enter into the hearts of all thy children, flashing from soul to soul, awakening the spirit to a new revelation of their divine nature. May those who suffer feel the warm glow of thy Christ's healing light, may they take up their cross of suffering and fix their minds upon its emancipation and its power to redeem and release. For a few wondrous moments the shining form stood silent as waves of spiritual power radiated from him. For one eternal moment we were both wrapped in unutterable peace. Then he faded from my sight. Somehow I knew that my room would never be the same again. Chapter 13, The New World. By this time Zeros had ceased to make appointments when he wished to renew our experiences. He had now linked his mentality to mine to such an extent that he was able to make his desires known without physical contact, and to receive my acquiescence in return. He and I were old friends now, for we had made so many excursions into the past and adventured in thought so many times that I no longer felt any strangeness in our difference in dimension. Our minds met on one plane of thought, and after all that is what really matters. He had often hinted that a link existed between us springing from the past, but nothing would induce him to expand upon that subject, nor would he allow me to glimpse any part one might have played upon the stages of past existence. Ao, I suppose my past is too murky to be told, I would suggest, jokingly, hoping to spur him into some personal revelation. I have only myself to blame in that he would neither give assent nor dissent to that suggestion, but merely smiled inscrutably, inferring that any such knowledge could not be for my benefit and might endow some particular phase of our record with undue distinction. In the early days of our adventuring I had usually experienced some discomfort and nervous strain as I embarked upon, and returned from, some travel out of time. But as the months rolled by these physical effects diminished so that I was enabled to slip out of physical consciousness as easily as out of an old suit. In the incredible adventure in time and space which Zeros had used so adroitly to make known to me, not only the real history of man but the reality behind his existence, I had come to regard him with a deep and abiding affection. It now seemed to me to be the most natural thing to look upon him as my constant companion and advisor. At the appointed time I would regard his chair, instinctively knowing that he would already be there, preparing to slow down his intense vibrations so that I could make sense contact with him. Now a rather special occasion had arrived, for I knew that we had finished with the past, and future visits outside of my accustomed dimension would be in violation of our accepted principles of time. I knew that the further astronomers peer into the depths of space the more does time evaporate into timelessness or becomes purely relative, but I was still held in the limitations of a three-dimensional mind. Prophecy was something I could not understand. So it was with a thrill of conjecture that I awaited his next visit. Yes, there he was, the first faint impress on the padded seat as his form slowly became subject to gravity. In another moment he had arrived, as naturally as if he had just stepped into the room. In my eagerness I told him how excited I was to have reached the threshold of new time. Aor, time, eh? He smiled back at me indulgently. Ao, it does confuse you, I know. Yet to live in timelessness, as we do, saves a great deal of trouble. We think only in terms of progress, that is our form of time. But then we do not have to struggle to feed and clothe our bodies. So I will give you a little picture to aid your understanding. Ayo, you sometimes go to the cinema and take your seat in the stalls. A picture is shown and perhaps it covers a great period of time, representing several generations of the same family, but with an unbroken theme. And you, in your stall, are so impressed that you link yourself with the events depicted, you become part of the story. You are that hero or heroine, you identify yourself with him or her. Yet you have not moved in time or space, you are still in your stall and only an hour or two has passed. AOA soul incarnates, putting on a human garment as a means of contacting the conditions of the environment it is about to enter. Although standing still in eternity, not moving in infinity, the soul observes all the events marching by, to such an extent that it feels it is taking part in them. It is as if the soul were watching over a loom in which myriads of threads were being woven into a fabric, with a specific pattern, and having some little control over it. Its destiny lies in the pattern being made, but it can alter the pattern slightly, for good or for bad. Ayo, but here is the point, you do not each have a loom of your own. The loom is so large that its pattern applies to every living soul, each of which is interwoven with that of the others, there is mutual influence between them all. You have your personal destiny, which you can affect by your actions and which is built up out of your experiences of the past and the action of your free will, and there is heredity and environment which provide you with another form of destiny, and then there is your national destiny, the fate of the country to which you belong or to which you give yourself, and finally there is world destiny, the destiny of the whole race of mankind. AI expressed my appreciation for this helpful picture. AO, but, AI queried, AO, I do not see how you can show me the future when it does not comprise a completed pattern. A patiently Zeros replied. AO, you and I have traveled together through a portrayal of the past. That was comparatively easy because the events had crystallized into form and made their pattern. We merely recaptured them. The future we shall see will be a synthesis of events built up by those who can see a great deal further than you can. It cannot be exact because it deals with destiny within the toils of time. I can tell you with exactitude the destiny of the human race, which is to be reunited with its creator, because that is a consummation existing outside of time. It is already there, in existence at this moment. Only in your prison of time, your experience, are you still traveling towards it? In spirit you do not travel anywhere, you are where you wish to be. He smiled at me. Ayo, you cannot grasp that? Well, never mind, it does not really matter. But remember that God exists and plans outside of time, you could not possibly imagine him wondering what is going to happen next. He creates in whole complete ideas, in his mind the earth has already reached the end of its destined career. He cannot fail. You may say that the earth has already passed the nadir of its destiny, which was to aid the rehabilitation of mankind, the fallen race. Now it is on the upward arc of its redemptive purpose. Ayo, it doesn't look like it, from all appearances, AI protested, somewhat cynically. Ayo, only apparently is it so. In the past man has accepted defeat after defeat, refusing to learn the obvious lesson. But now at long last he is beginning to see the light. There is a widespread search for new understanding of what life and its problems are all about. Conditions have improved so much that events in some obscure native village become known the world over. Your world is shrinking, and so opportunity arrives for a far greater measure of divine intervention. Time is coming to mean less to you than it did, though you might not think so. Ayo, try and realize what God is trying to accomplish, without enduring harm to your souls. He aims at becoming conscious in the hearts of men and women. And owing to the darkened nature of man's soul, that is something which must be attained very slowly and carefully, lest the soul be destroyed. He accomplishes this through his incarnate Son, the prism which steps down his tremendous power so that it heals but does not harm. In this way the whole community, incarnate and discarnate, is being redeemed and uplifted from the degradation of what you term original sin, nothing worthwhile is being lost. And as man is being restored towards his former pristine self, so is the earth itself being lifted in vibration to what it was intended to be. I spoke my thoughts aloud.